This is the NPR News Update for Wednesday, August 13th. I'm Perry Finelli. On the podcast today, Republicans are uniting behind Hennepin County Commissioner Jeff Johnson, who won the party's nomination for governor over three other candidates yesterday. Political newcomer Mike McFadden is the Republican choice to run against DFL U.S. Senator Al Franken in November. The Sunfish Lake business executive handily won yesterday's GOP primary. Two members of the Minnesota House won hotly contested primaries yesterday. And the U.S. Agriculture Department says the nation's farmers will haul in their biggest corn and soybean crops ever this fall. The four Republican candidates for governor are vowing to unify behind Hennepin County Commissioner Jeff Johnson, who won the party nomination for governor yesterday over the three other candidates. He says his first task is to rally Republicans around his campaign in a race he expects to be competitive. Tom Scheck reports.
Jeff Johnson won the primary after a relatively low-profile intra-party campaign where the candidates were reluctant to criticize each other. For months, it was unclear which candidate would win, but Johnson, with the help of the Republican Party endorsement, squeezed out the victory with about 30% of the vote. Johnson said his short-term goal will be to unify the party and raise money. He said he was looking forward to challenging DFL Governor Mark Dayton in November.
Over 15 months ago, I said we got three elections to run. We got three campaigns to win. We've got an endorsement contest, we've got a primary, and we've got the general. Well, we got two out of three done, and now it's time that we finish the job.
Johnson won the primary despite being well outspent by business executive Scott Honor, being criticized by Marty Seifert for losing an earlier statewide election, and blasted by former House Speaker Kurt Zellers over his plan to broaden the sales tax. Johnson relied on volunteers within the Republican Party to help him secure the nomination. For weeks, those volunteers made thousands of phone calls on Johnson's behalf. Zellers, who finished second, said it was tough to run against an endorsed candidate.
A lot of it is just a low voter turnout. It's a primary in the middle of the summer. And, you know, the party endorsement means something. I think it doesn't mean quite what it used to, but I think that's, you know, part of it.
At least some Republican voters who didn't vote for Johnson in the primary say they're ready to help him win in November. Josh Ralph of Maple Grove was backing Zellers, but says he's now on board with Johnson's campaign.
As a business owner and fairly conservative, anything's better than what we have right now.
Johnson now has to shift from making the case to Republican voters to general election voters. He said his main theme will be to say Dayton's record isn't as good as the governor claims.
My message about Dayton is that we can do better. I know he's going to tout an unemployment number that's lower than the national average, but that alone doesn't resonate with the people that I talk to, because we've got half the people in this state, according to the Dayton administration, who are in jobs that they don't want, that are below their pay level, that are below their education level.
Democrats were quick to criticize Johnson as having a record that is unfriendly to workers and to women. They also say he's embraced the Tea Party and Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker's policies. Dayton has mostly stayed on the sidelines as Republicans duked it out to win the nomination. Dayton told reporters earlier this week that he's looking forward to knowing who his November opponent actually is.
I think it comes down to who comes out of the primary and who is the opponent then, and what are his positions on issues. It's not going to be a party platform any longer. It's going to be that person's specific positions on specific issues.
Dayton said his main campaign focus will be on improving the state's job climate, K-12 and higher education, and the state's transportation system. The governor called Johnson to congratulate him last night and said he looks forward to engaging in a constructive discussion about the issues important to Minnesotans over the next 12 weeks. Tom Scheck, Minnesota Public Radio News, Plymouth.
Republican primary voters have chosen Sunfish Lake business executive Mike McFadden as their candidate to run against DFL U.S. Senator Al Franken in November. Now the campaign McFadden runs is likely to focus on President Obama and voters' dissatisfaction with Washington politics. Mark Sedeklik has more.
McFadden is a first-time candidate who says he can apply his business success to making the federal government more efficient and less intrusive. Celebrating his primary victory with supporters at a St. Paul bar Tuesday night, McFadden called Franken part of the problem in Washington.
He has voted with the president 97% of the time. He's for bigger government, more regulation. He's for Obamacare. He's for higher energy costs. And he's for an education system in the status quo that does not work for some of our most vulnerable citizens in this state. It is not acceptable.
Like many Republicans, McFadden wants the Affordable Care Act repealed. He also says the federal government overregulates business, which he says is holding back the economic recovery.
I know how to get us back onto the path of growth and prosperity. We can move forward. We can see our greatest days ahead of us. And it starts with new leadership in Washington. It starts with replacing Senator Franken on November.
Franken told reporters last week he's worked hard for Minnesotans in the Senate. He suggested that emphasizing that record will be the basis of his reelection campaign.
You know, I'm just going to put one foot in front of the other, do my job as a senator. That's what I've been doing. I went to the Senate to be a workhorse and not a show horse. I've done it.
Franken became a senator in the summer of 2009 after a protracted recount and legal battle concluded he won the 2008 election by attracting 312 more votes than Republican Senator Norm Coleman. Many Minnesotans turned out to vote for Barack Obama in that 2008 election. With no presidential race this fall, Franken and other Minnesota Democrats will have to fight low DFL voter turnout and contend with a president whose popularity has been dropping.
Republicans have some important structural advantages going into this midterm election.
Catherine Pearson is a political scientist at the University of Minnesota.
Republicans have more voters who are more likely to turn out. Older voters, whiter voters, more affluent voters definitely spell some problems for Democrats, as does the fact that President Obama does not have very high approval ratings.
Pearson says McFadden's primary victory was made all the stronger because he won it with Republican Party backing he did not expect to have.
There's no doubt that McFadden got a big boost when Republicans endorsed him at the state convention, meaning that Republicans have already coalesced behind him. He did not face a particularly competitive primary and really has been able to focus on the general election.
In primary results for other federal offices, Republican Tom Emmer won the nomination for Congress in the 6th District, where Michelle Bachmann is not seeking re-election. And Jim Hagedorn won the Republican nomination over Aaron Miller in southern Minnesota's 1st District. He'll face DFL Congressman Tim Walz in November. Mark Zedeklik, Minnesota Public Radio News, St. Paul.
Two members of the Minnesota House won hotly contested primaries yesterday. DFL State Representative Phyllis Kahn of Minneapolis prevailed in the toughest challenge of her 42-year career following a campaign that divided the city's Somali population. And Republican Jennifer Loon defeated a challenger from the right, Curtis Gilbert reports.
Kahn says there's definitely an upside to winning in a contested race.
To run this kind of campaign gives you much more connectedness with the community.
More voters have met her and know how to get in touch with her because of all the door knocking. But Kahn acknowledges the election didn't exactly bring the community together. She says it was difficult
because of the perceived racial divisions.
Kahn's challenger was school board member Mahmoud Noor. His supporters, like Sagal Abdurrahman, wanted him to be the Somali community's voice at the legislature.
I think he understands us more. He knows our struggle and everything.
But Kahn had Somali supporters too, most notably city council member Abdi Warsami, and the race got ugly. A physical fight broke out at a precinct caucus in February. There were accusations of voter fraud, intimidation, and bullying. The state Supreme Court even had to step in after an election judge allegedly asked absentee voters whether they intended to support their Somali brother or the old Jewish lady, meaning Kahn. For yesterday's election, Minneapolis took the unprecedented step of appointing sergeants-at-arms to keep the peace outside several polling places, although election officials say there were no serious problems. In conceding the bruising election, Noor made a plea for unity.
The division and the bitterness that we've seen in this campaign ends today. We will hold our hands together. Whatever things that have been happening and the divisions that have been shown that the Somali community is divided, we are not divided. We are one community and we will thrive as one community.
In Eden Prairie, Republican Representative Jennifer Loon was challenged by Sheila Keeney, in part because of Loon's vote to legalize same-sex marriage. tens of thousands of dollars poured into the race from outside groups backing one or the other of the candidates. Loon ended up winning handily with more than 60% of the vote, but she says it was tough.
It was 12 weeks of virtually 24/7 contact with voters, campaigning, reaching out. It was a very intense period, and I have not been through anything quite like this before.
Loon says she believes primary voters looked at her whole record and didn't focus on the same-sex marriage vote. Curtis Gilbert, Minnesota Public Radio News, Minneapolis.
DFL State Auditor Rebecca Otto easily fought off a primary challenge from former State Representative Matt Intenza. Intenza far outspent Otto on the race and used more than $600,000 of his own money for his campaign. Still, Otto garnered more than 80% of the vote. She said she's happy the voters recognized that she was the better candidate.
People don't always understand the job of the state auditor, but they know that I've done an excellent job. And you know, we take great pride in good government in Minnesota, so knowing that all the love and support that was pouring in, even though it was a mountain of money that was thrown at me and very negative campaigning, I prevailed. And so, again, love can trump money in politics, and I think that that's really, really important.
Intenza says he will now back Otto for auditor, but he blamed his defeat on low voter turnout. Otto will face Republican Randy Gilbert in November. This is the NPR News Update. The U.S. Attorney's Office has announced the indictments of 20 members of an alleged conspiracy to profit from stolen mobile phones and devices. Brant Williams reports.
U.S. Attorney Andy Luger called the operation one of the largest criminal enterprises in the Twin Cities. He says over the last 8 years, a Twin Cities-based crime family has made millions of dollars from reselling stolen and fraudulently obtained phones. According to the indictment filed Monday in U.S. District Court, 42-year-old Jamal Mustafa directed members of the group to open mobile accounts under stolen identities in order to obtain new phones at discounted prices. Members of the organization called Runners also stole phones through burglaries and robberies. Authorities allege the ill-gotten phones were resold for a profit in 13 wireless stores throughout the Twin Cities owned and operated by members of the Mustafa family. Luger says some of the devices were sold overseas where the group could make even larger profits. Brant Williams, Minnesota Public Radio News, Minneapolis.
Twin Cities housing prices rose slightly last month. However, as Matt Sefik reports, the overall price increases come despite a drop in demand.
The median home sales price in the Twin Cities metro was $215,000 last month. That's up 3% from the same time last year. The slight rise in prices comes even as the number of new listings rose 10% and the number of closed sales fell. Emily Green, president of the Minneapolis Area Association of Realtors, says low-priced foreclosures and short sales now account for a smaller share of the market, and that's pushing prices up. Green says that wasn't the case a few years ago.
Traditional sellers who had really great quality homes who were not in distress were not on the market. For a lot of years, the only houses that we had on the market were people who absolutely had to sell.
Last month, foreclosures and short sales accounted for nearly 13% of all closings, down from 34% 2 years ago. Matt Sepik, Minnesota Public Radio News.
A University of Minnesota study has found that mothers who have diabetes, hypertension, or obesity are less likely to breastfeed their babies, Lorna Benson reports.
Women who entered pregnancy in poorer health were 30% less likely to intend to breastfeed than healthy mothers in the national survey of 2,400 childbearing women. Lead author of the study, Katie Casamano, says women with complicated pregnancies also reported getting less breastfeeding support at the time of birth.
We know that there are certain things that hospitals can do to help women who intend to breastfeed do so successfully.
Casamano says best practices include helping moms initiate breastfeeding in the hour after birth, keeping moms and babies together in the same room, and not giving pacifiers to breastfed babies. Lorna Benson, Minnesota Public Radio News.
This is the NPR News Update, Minnesota's news on your schedule. The U.S. Agriculture Department says the nation's farmers will haul in their biggest corn and soybean crops ever this fall. For farmers, the big supply means corn prices will remain unprofitable. That will hurt Minnesota farmers whose production will suffer because of June's damaging weather, Mark Stile reports.
On the Jason Thibodeau farm in southwest Minnesota, the corn crop appears to be in good shape. The dark green stalks are 8 feet tall or more, and Thibodeau says the ears on those stalks are developing quickly.
Things are looking really, really well for us locally.
As in other parts of the state, it's been dry in recent weeks. But Thibodeau says he thinks there's enough remaining moisture stored in the soil to get the crop through. He pulls an ear off a stalk to examine it.
There's some potential there.
BB-sized kernels of corn line the ear in neat rolls clear to the tip. A potential bumper crop in the making? Well, Thibodeau says probably not.
I feel we're going to hit a normal yield.
The factor separating Minnesota from other states looking at record yields was the month of June, when up to a foot of rain fell in parts of the state.
Did it hurt us some? Yes. I feel it did.
Thibodeau says a small part of his crop, maybe 5%, was drowned out or stunted by the heavy rains. That happened in many fields across the state. Add in some hail damage and the weather hurt Minnesota corn just enough to turn a potential record harvest into an average or a little above average crop. The U.S. Agriculture Department projects the state's farmers to harvest 168 bushels an acre. By comparison, Illinois and Iowa farmers could average 20 bushels an acre above that. Abbott Futures commodity specialist Peter Georgentone says the record national production could push corn prices down even further below break-even.
We're going to be buried in crop for right now. I think the soybeans are set up for another dollar break to the downside, maybe corn another 30, 40 cent break.
A bumper crop can help a farmer offset low prices because each unexpected bushel is unplanned but welcome extra revenue that provides a buffer against losses. But with lower yields than elsewhere, Minnesota farmers will have fewer bushels to sell, and the state's harvest may bring in a lot less than last year's $6 billion crop.
It's going to be a tough year.
University of Minnesota grain marketing specialist Ed Ussett says if corn prices stay in the current $3 to $4 range, most farmers will lose money on this year's crop.
I figure it costs the average Minnesota farmer $4.5 to $5 a bushel to produce one bushel of corn. The math is not very pretty on corn.
Helping offset the corn loss, though, are soybean prices. Although they're also sinking, soybean prices are still at profitable levels. The cheap corn is also good news for cattle, hog, and dairy farmers who use the grain for feed. Most should make a nice profit this year. Southwest Minnesota farmer Jason Thibodeau is philosophical about the slump in corn prices. He says they're part of the economic cycle in agriculture.
It's just the way it is. And when we hit these low prices, we're going to have to learn to tighten belts up and learn to weather that storm.
Thibodeau has a bit of an economic cushion this year. He raises cattle and expects them to produce a profit. And new technology could help him squeeze out some extra cash by making his crop production more efficient. Thibodeau stands in one of his fields as a crop advisor launches the newest advance in farm equipment, a drone. The drone's camera can quickly see troubled areas in cornfields that could improve with more fertilizer, boosting production and revenue. But the drone's vision is limited. The high-flying camera can't do much to help Minnesota farmers spot the next chance to sell corn at a profit. They're just going to have to wait for that. Mark Stile, Minnesota Public Radio News, Cottonwood County.
And finally, northern Minnesota lakes will see a much smaller wild rice harvest this year because of heavy spring rains. Rod Ustapak runs the state's wild rice program for the DNR. He says lakes from Bemidji to the Canadian border will yield only a quarter of last year's harvest.
The wild rice is so dynamic that if you look at it in the spring, it almost looks like any other fish lake or in-between lake in Minnesota. But when you add the wild rice component, it changes the look of the lake to almost like a wheat field.
This year, fewer lakes will be transformed by rice. The same heavy rains that flooded International Falls and communities across the state washed away delicate young wild rice plants just as they reached the surface. Statewide, Ustapak expects a harvest at roughly 60% of a really good year. And that's the NPR News Update for Wednesday, August 13th. I'm Corey Finelli. Thanks for listening.